Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
And welcome into a rare weekend edition of Locked On Nets. I spent all day hanging out with him, and I'm not tired of him yet. Josh Bass joining me from the Upper West Side. How you doing, Josh?
What's up, Gavin? It really is a testament to our friendship that we spend this much time together in person, and then we're able to talk about the Nets together for a little bit and not get on each other's nerves.
Well, it's really funny. We had like this real like come to Jesus moment yesterday where we were. It was you, me, and a friend of the show, Marcus, aka Alvin, NBA employee, which I'm going to mention every time I say his name from now on. And we were talking about how we need to diversify our friend group because a lot of our friends either went away or are busy or are in, I guess from college and in different parts of the country. So we were saying how we needed to find new friends. And I think this weekend has really proven that out because we spent a gross amount of time together.
Yeah, we did not live up to that. And like Mark Wahlberg and Taylor Kitsch, we are the lone survivors of our friend group right now.
Yeah, so Josh, I'm going to switch it up on you a little bit. We normally end with this, but since we're on the topic of last night anyways, I want to get what grinds your gears at the beginning of the podcast. Because I have a feeling people don't always listen through and they miss this sometimes, and there's some real gems in there.
I don't know. Do we want to bury the lead with the Nets coverage that we're going to be doing? Should we
save okay, here, yeah.
Let's save this as a teaser for the end.
Okay, then, all right. It's coming up. I don't want to say it's the best one we've had because we've had some really good ones, but it's cool. And
it's the most relatable.
Yeah. It's up there. Okay, but the Nets coverage that we have, we're continuing our series on going position by position, net to net, if you will. And talking about every guy in that position group and asking the one big question you and I have on them going into the season. And today, we got kind of lazy this weekend, and the season is rapidly approaching. So we decided to combine two position groups, the small forwards and the power forwards, or as we're calling them, the forwards. And we are going to start with, I think, probably the most valuable guy out of this entire group, and that is Caris LeUzi LeVert. Josh, since he's such a valuable piece, I think we both wanted to go big picture on him. What would you say his offensive ceiling is as a player? Not even the season, just overall.
You know, I really like LeVert's game. He's someone that is one of the most promising Nets on the roster, I think. I was really impressed with him last year. And I definitely think he can grow into the type of player that's averaging over 18 points a game on good true shooting percentage. I'd say over 55% at least. And he's someone who's getting a lot of usage, whether that's handling the ball, passing the ball, taking those shots, because he's a very diverse offensive skill set. He's a really good shooter on two-pointers. He's great at getting to the basket, which is something that I did not necessarily expect last year. Shot 57% on twos. And when you have that as your baseline skill set, if you can add to that, that's going to be so valuable. Only shot 32% on threes last year. I think a lot of Nets fans noticed that he tends to rush his three-point shot a lot, even when he has time. That's something that's a little concerning because it doesn't seem like he necessarily fixed that between last season and this season so far. But I think he's someone that has the natural touch to really improve his three-point shot. And he's so crafty. He's a good handle. He has all the things that you look for in a wing player that's going to lead the offense. So I think he can be 18 to 20 point per game scorer and someone that you can really build around as a contributor and one of the leaders of this team.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, and I remember you just constantly talking him up last season. I kind of shrugged it off, like, yeah, whatever. If you're watching the Nets all the time, inevitably you're going to kind of overrate some of these young guys, and anyone with even a little bit of talent is really going to stand out, and you're going to think they're better than they actually are. But, you know, this whole summer, watching a lot of the summer league games, just trying to read up and see, even going back to his Michigan days, as much of him as I possibly can. I'm really more of a believer now, and he just seems like someone who was a lottery talent that, because of a variety of injuries, while he was in college. The Nets were able to snag him in the 20s, and I think last season really proved that out. You just start looking at his body, and you see the 7-foot wingspan, you see the 6-foot-7 height, and then you throw in those guard skills. And as you said, I really think he was rushing a lot last season, and he never really got totally comfortable. And I think we're seeing flashes in preseason that even if he's not totally there yet, he's kind of trending in that direction. But he does like naturally have really good touch on his jumper. And I think because his arms are so long, his release also naturally isn't extremely quick. And then suddenly you're jumping from Big Ten basketball to playing the Warriors or the Celtics or the Cavs. You're going to try and get that shot up a little bit quicker. And I think just having the extra offseason, getting those 80 or so games under his belt, he's going to go more and more in a direction where he can be a very consistent shooter. But that driving ability, I think, is eventually what's going to make him, if not a superstar in this league, just a tier below that. Because you combine that 7-foot wingspan with some very real first-step explosiveness, and I think people underrate just how valuable having those long arms around the basket is, the ability to just manipulate the ball and kind of go up and over people, euro step into floaters. That's really going to allow him to diversify his game. And the way he already handles the basketball, that I think that's kind of a precursor to being more diverse in how he finishes around the basket. And you just see so much potential there. And I think what was really encouraging is, in the opening days of this Nets preseason, you heard Kenny Atkinson praise his combination of maturity and ruthless competitiveness. On top of all that, he thinks he's gotten even stronger this year. And that was really the big thing for me, because Atkinson, I think he called him Bambi. And that's really what he looked like last year. He's this guy with long limbs running around, kind of like a chicken with his head cut off. And I'm going to stop this rant soon, since I'm mixing analogies at this point. But the point is, I think the big thing for him this offseason was that he had to get stronger and he had to get more confident. And based on what Kenny Atkins had said, both of those things have been checked off.
Yeah, I think this is a guy, when we talk about LeVert, it's someone with playmaking chops. I think that it's really underrated that he was essentially the point guard at Michigan his last 2 years. I know that he battled a lot of injuries while he was there, but once Nick Stauskas declared for the draft after his sophomore year, Caris LeVert was the point guard on that team. He averaged 5 assists a game as a senior. But I think something that's really unusual is that he was a great three-point shooter in college, 40% on threes. And I know when he was looking at the draft, a lot of the big questions were about him was that, does he have the athleticism to score efficiently on twos? And I think he answered that question last year. So now he just has to improve on his three-point shot, which was his strength just 1 year ago coming out of the draft. So you have to believe that he's going to make those adjustments on his three-point shot and really become more comfortable with the NBA distance as he gets more attempts and gets more of those reps up.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating discussion, because with the emergence of guys like Isaiah Thomas, I think it has maybe not NBA evaluators, but fans kind of questioning, well, just how important is height? And I think Caris as a playmaker really highlights where height can really, really help you, because you go back and watch some of his Michigan tape, as I did today, and where he really excelled getting assists were when he could draw double teams. But it's kind of like the same thing with having a short quarterback. If you can't see over the defense, it doesn't matter if you have a double team, because you're not going to be able to get it out, and more likely than not, you're going to turn the ball over. But because he was 6'7" with alien-like arms, he could just hold the ball over his head, and he could pick out cutters, he could pick out bigs, kind of sealing off their defender underneath the basket. And again, as the game kind of naturally slows down for him, I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the NBA. So all that is to say, I think that's a very astute observation on your part, and something Nets fans should watch out for this year. Caris LeVert, obviously extremely exciting, a guy who's getting a little bit less play, to the point that on this podcast, when we did that crossover with Josh Lloyd and Locked On Fantasy, he had the nerve to bet me that this guy Joe Harris would play less than 100 minutes this year. I took that bet and was relatively happy with it, but I did think about it for a second. Josh, we've kind of talked a lot about whether or not this guy has a role on the team, but the more and more I watch him, I keep thinking to myself, isn't he kind of similar to what Allen Crabb is? And even if he's not as good, my big question is he more valuable at his contract than Crabb is at his?
I think right now Joe Harris is more valuable at his contract, but as I've mentioned a lot on this podcast, I'm not a fan of Allen Crabb's value. I think that he's very overpaid for what he is right now, and he could definitely develop into a better player, but he needs to grow that skill set to be worth that contract. And I think on a minimum salary, Joe Harris is someone that pretty good shooter from three at 39%. He's not exactly like a marksman or someone that if he's banking on that as his primary role in the NBA, he needs to improve. But he's a smart player. He doesn't take that much off the table. He has some athletic limitations, and he can get a little bit overzealous when he drives to the basket, just trying to do too much. But he's a good three-point shooter, and he's definitely someone that is always going to be prepared. So he's a great 15th man to have on your roster, someone that you can put in a pinch. You know he's going to be able to run the offense, run around screens, and shoot threes effectively with little airspace. But I think Allen Crabbe is someone that has the potential to grow into more than just a three-point shooter. He's a better three-point shooter than Harris is, but he also has, I think, some athletic skills and the defensive mindset to really grow into more of a traditional 3-and-D role as opposed to someone that's just a three-point specialist that isn't adding that much. So Harris might be better value right now, but I think that if Crabbe lives up to the expectations that the Nets have set for him, because they're really high on this guy, Kenny Atkinson loves him. Clearly, he's a priority for Sean Marks. They tried to get him last offseason. They made the trade with Portland to acquire him now. They think this guy is going to be a good player, at least a starter, and they're thinking he can live up to that contract. But so as of now, I think Harris is more valuable, but we'll see. And hopefully Crabbe can live up to his contract as well.
Yeah, I'm essentially with you. The one thing that I thought was interesting was when I did some not even a deep dive. I tipped a toe into the advanced stats on Joe Harris last year. And if you buy those, and I'll say this with, I guess, the warning that I think in general offense and defensive win shares are pretty highly manipulated based on who's on the floor with you. And I know statisticians try and take that stuff into account, but it's kind of hard to do. But his defensive win shares at 0.6 were actually six times higher than what he contributed on the offensive end. And then if you want to go to the tape and you want to go to the scouting, he was a guy who in college was a part of one of the best defenses in college basketball and played under Tony Bennett at the University of Virginia. So he certainly has some chops at that end, even if he doesn't necessarily have quite the length that Crabbe does and the potential that Crabbe theoretically could have on defense. And I kind of see Crabbe more in J.J. Redick mold. I see Harris as like a very poor man's Kyle Korver with how big he is and just how much elevation he gets on his shot. I know he stated his goal was to shoot 45% on three this year. We'll see about that. I'm not quite sure how realistic it was, but he did hit 38.5, and you got to figure that was absolutely his focus this offseason. So I guess I'm going with kind of a non-answer and just a wait and see on this, but I think if Allen Crabbe gets hurt at any point this year, I'll just throw this out there. I think Nets fans will be happily surprised by how easily Joe Harris is able to come in and replicate some of that production. And all that comes with the, I guess, prerequisite that Crabbe hasn't expanded his game and isn't a more complete offensive player, which I think you and me are both taking kind of a wait and see approach on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Allen Crabbe, they're both the same height, Allen Crabbe and Joe Harris, and Allen Crabbe has a 6'11 wingspan, while Joe Harris only has a 6'6 wingspan. I think Joe Harris reminds me a lot of someone like Anthony Morrow in that he's a very good three-point shooter, probably not as good as Morrow was in his prime, but he really does not add that much else. And if he's not knocking down threes consistently, there's no point in having him on the court.
Yeah, I'm basing this off just watching him in preseason, liking him a lot in college. So I probably have to see a little bit more of him to get a full gauge of his limitations. But I don't know, man. That shot is really pretty. So as a fellow shooter who can't do anything else, I've fallen in love with Joe Harris's game a little bit. We'll see if he can actually live up to it. Okay, next guy we have up, our final small forward, Damari Carroll. The big question on him, and I think outside of the fact that he came attached with the present of a first-round pick, the big question on him is, can he help Rondae Hollis-Jefferson develop, and will he be a mentor for the young Bucks as a whole? That seems like a huge part of the reason he was brought in.
Yeah, I think he is one of the biggest pieces of this whole Nets team because he is the Kenny Atkinson success story. Along with Jeremy Lin, Damari Carroll is someone that was really helped by Kenny Atkinson, and he was rewarded with a $60 million contract. So when these guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert are listening to Kenny Atkinson day in and day out, stressing improvement, stressing incremental development, they can look at a guy like Damari Carroll and see that it works out. When he was with Atlanta, he was one of the best wing players in the league. Maybe not, didn't put up the gaudy stats in terms of points per game, but he was a very solid three-point shooter. Became a 40% three-point shooter his last year with Atlanta. Solid defender, good rebounder, a smart player. And he's someone that I think a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson can really idolize and try to make his game after and try to really see if he can learn any tips and tricks from Damari Carroll that he can use to kind of help his shot develop and help learn to be a professional.
Yeah, and that was kind of my big takeaway, because we can even throw it out there now. Our question for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is one offensive skill that we would add to his game. And I think these two questions are kind of intertwined. Damari Carroll only shot 25 three-pointers his first 3 years in the league. And as you said, last season he only hit 36%. The two seasons before that, he was hovering right around 40%. So, I mean, I don't know how much credit you want to give Kenny Atkinson for that. Obviously, he was a pretty big part of that in Atlanta. And it's going to be fascinating, at least to me, to see if Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, someone who was kind of in the same mold as Carroll when he came into the league, just big, long, active defensively, a lot of athleticism, whether Hollis-Jefferson can develop the same way. And you could argue maybe Carroll had more natural touch. He did have one season in college where he shot the three ball fairly well, which Hollis-Jefferson didn't. But to me, that's kind of the skill, if I'm looking for something to add to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's game, that's what I'm looking at, specifically because he's on this Nets team. And the big weakness in having him out there is you have kind of that one spot on the floor where you don't have to play out, and the lane isn't quite as open as it could be. And if he theoretically could turn into a league average 3-point shooter, and you combine that with his superb defense, there's not really a lineup that you couldn't fit him into, when right now I think there are definitive limitations on who you can play him with.
Yeah, I think Damari Carroll is going to have a great season, and I think he's someone that we can look at. The Nets got assets for taking his contract, and if they can rehabilitate him, and then maybe at the trade deadline or even this offseason, they could send him to a contending team who might want his services, and then they can get another asset back. So it's kind of like Sean Marks taking someone else's trash that they don't want, making it someone else's treasure that they can use for just more draft accumulation and salary cap space. But if we move on to Rondae, I think that he's someone that has this rep as having a broken jump shot, and he definitely does not have the range or consistency on his jumper also, but his natural touch isn't awful. I mean, he shot 75% on free throws last year, which is pretty decent for someone who is known as having not a good jump shot and people consistently lay off him. So it shows that there is some natural touch there, and hopefully he can extend that out to a mid-range game or perhaps even a three-point line as we move further on the season and his career.
Yeah, his form is just kind of weird to
me. It's bad.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, and I always question with those guys, because like free throws, like I get that they're usually indicative of touch and overall shooting ability. But with some guys, you can just they figure out a way to get into rhythm at the free throw line, and obviously his shot is kind of slow developing, and that's not an issue when he's taking free throws. I'm just wondering if he was going to take a high volume of three, and for his career he's shot 81 at a 24% clip, whether he could kind of keep that up and that shot is sustainable over a long period of time where he's not necessarily in rhythm and he's catching it with a guy running right at him. So those are kind of my big questions on him, and whether he'll have to reshape that shot at some point if he wants it to be a lot better. But that's interesting. And again, if he could get that down, that doesn't just make him a way better player. It just opens up so many possibilities for Kenny Atkinson and how he can use him and when he can play him. And I think it really changes the whole trajectory of his career if he can get that shot down, because he goes from a guy who's decidedly a role player, kind of masking himself as a franchise centerpiece just because the Nets don't have that many of them, to a legitimate guy the Nets can build around and someone who they'd want to keep around for the entirety of his career. All right, a guy who's
One guy I always think of, like someone who's a great free throw shooter but can never have a jump shot at all, Andre Miller, journeyman point guard.
That's a good one.
On a bunch of teams. He was a great free throw shooter, but he had no jump shot whatsoever. I don't know if he was just hesitant to shoot always or just wasn't confident in his shot. There was just a lot of stuff going on there, but he was automatic whenever he got to the line.
Yeah, I loved, again, we love tangents on this podcast, but I loved when he ended up on the Spurs in what turned out to be the final year of his career. And like, he didn't play that much, but Popovich would just throw him out there at times with Ginobili and Tim Duncan. And there were a few games where they ripped off like 30-6 runs with those guys out there. And they were all so much slower and so subpar athletically. It's like almost a comical point compared to the other teams they were playing. But they were just so, so much smarter than the guys they were going against. And it was almost a joke.
Was on point.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, but in what turned out to be the final half of Tim Duncan's career against the Thunder, where they were down by like 35 in that game, and Duncan ended up finishing with 19-6. It was all him and Andre Miller, and they were running these pick and rolls, and they're going against Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, like all these giants that they shouldn't have had a chance against, and they were just, he was just threading passes, and Duncan was going and finishing around guys. If you couldn't tell, extremely fond memories of Andre Miller. I'm happy you triggered them by bringing them up. So a guy with a less questionable three-point shot than everyone previously mentioned, but one we're still questioning, Quincy AC shot 43% from beyond range last season. Josh, is that sustainable? And if it is, does that make him a real part of this Nets rotation?
I think his shot, honestly, looked great to me. Has beautiful rotation on it, good touch. He's someone that when he was open towards the top of the key, I always thought he was going to knock it down. And when you shoot 43% on threes, I know it's a pretty small sample size, but he was a good three-point shooter in the D League last year as well. So it seems like he's kind of figured that out. The problem with him is when he gets the ball on a catch and shoot and he doesn't have too much time to set up and he still takes that shot, that's when his mechanics are going to be a little out of whack and he's not as consistent. My bigger question for him, it's not his three-point shot. It's more of his, can he finish effectively on twos? Because he was someone, he would knock down a couple threes and then he would try to take it to the rim. And he's not an explosive finisher. He doesn't have a lot of size, always been an undersized forward, even at his time in Baylor and college. So he's someone I really question how efficient he can be on twos. And I think his true shooting percentage was up at least over 60% at the start of the year with the Nets. And then it eventually fell down at 59%, which is still terrific. But he's someone that if his three-point shooting drops down a little bit to maybe just 39 or 40%, he's someone I'd be a little bit worried about.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I just read this whole article on him from Greg Logan at Newsday. Shout out to Greg, a former guest on this podcast with Dave Wurzberger. Hopefully we can get him on at some point this year to talk Nets. But he wrote this whole piece on AC, and AC was like almost like laughing about how ridiculous that his NBA career is kind of at this point predicated on his ability to knock down three-pointers. When in college, he didn't take – and keep he was like a real like stalwart at Baylor. He played significant minutes for them all 4 years he was there. And he didn't take a single three in college his first 2 years, and he took a total of seven his last two seasons. And he was known as this guy who's like strictly a banger. And he was someone who was actually – like he was somewhat efficient inside when he was at Baylor. But then he gets to the NBA, and he's like, oh my God, like immediately there are all these like guys in the league that are bigger than me, stronger than me. I have to get up to their height. And even then, he just didn't have the requisite athletic ability to really be an NBA guy. And he just totally goes and remakes his game. And you talk about it. He looks natural shooting three-pointers now. I know he had that one weird bank against the Knicks, but some of those shots just look utterly flawless. So it's going to be super interesting to see if that's sustainable. And I think if it is, he could be kind of a key part of this rotation, because as a lot of people have pointed out, he's really a nice fit next to Trevor Booker and two guys who don't really look like stereotypical NBA bigs or play like stereotypical NBA bigs, but they kind of complement each other. And together, they're a pretty dynamic duo in the front court.
Yeah, I think one interesting fact about AC is career 65% shooter within 3 feet. And last year with the Nets, he was down to 49%. So you have to think that that's going to, percentage is going to regress to the mean. And if he can get in high 50s, low 60s at the rim, he's going to be a very valuable offensive player. And defensively, he always competes. He always tries hard. So he can make up for that lack of size and not being able to rim protect, because he is very quick getting out on the perimeter and contesting shooters. So he could be a valuable player if that 2-point percentage bounces back.
All right. So we kind of hinted at it. Our final guy is Trevor Booker. And the questions are pretty simple. Does he deserve a rotation spot over AC? And I think the condition of that, and this is the one I want you to focus on, Josh, can he kind of focus his game? Because we see this diverse skill set. We kind of tongue-in-cheek call him mini LeBron at times, and there are all these different things he can do, but he's never really been able to concentrate them into a guy who's consistently effective.
Trevor Booker is probably one of the most frustrating players in the league for me. He has moments of brilliance. As you say, he can go pin a shot against the glass, start the fast break, and dish it off to his teammate for an easy assist. And then the next play, he's just chucking up a three with 20 seconds left on the shot clock. He needs to rein back some of those bad habits he has, and he needs to be more consistent, because he is one of the more talented players on this team. and his effort is contagious, and he really gets the crowd going and also his teammates going. So I think he does deserve a rotation spot over AC at the start of the year. I wouldn't be hesitant even to play him as the backup five and have him rotate with Jared Allen a little bit to see who's going to be the primary backup for Mozgov, because you need to find a spot for someone with his veteran presence and with his energy. And he's a skilled player, so he can kind of take some of that playmaking duties off of Spencer Dinwiddie and the backups. So he can be a really interesting piece for this team, and I would definitely find a spot for him at the start of the year. Whether Kenny Atkinson chooses to play Booker over AC or maybe they play together, that's really going to be the interesting question here.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Doing some research on him, it's almost like his game is kind of a microcosm of his life, because he's these incredibly diverse interests off the court. He apparently is invested in real estate, owns 18 different companies over the course, or has owned 18 different companies over the course of his NBA careers, according to the article, ranging from sports academies to record labels and even a private school at one point. So he's a fascinating dude. And on the court, in kind of the same way, he's this kind of enigma. He clearly plays hard, but as you kind of illuminated, he never really could put that into a consistently effective product. It was kind of frustrating because of that. The guy I think of when you kind of threw that description out at me is James Johnson, who at, I believe, age 30 was finally able to put that all together last season with Miami Heat. And you saw a guy who was just utterly destructive, like a freak of nature on defense, incredibly strong, incredibly quick. There really weren't a lot of better options to throw on a top opposing wing than James Johnson last offseason. Kind of got his three-point shot together, and because of that was really good attacking the rim. And I think that's kind of the archetype for Booker, even if he's not quite the same overall athlete that Johnson is, but to kind of maintain that intensity on defense and then offensively keep working on that three-point shot. And I know that's kind of our, I guess, like magic solution or Mike's magic stuff for everyone, but it really is the truth. If he can shoot a little bit better than the 32% from three he did last year and consistently get opposing defenses to respect that shot and run out on it, that's when I think he could be really, really good. Because then you kind of have a point forward type situation where he's attacking the rim, defenses are closing on him, and he can kind of hit shooters as he's going to the basket. And maybe that's not totally realistic because he's just not quite that dynamic, but he does have a little bit of that in his game, and he is big enough where if he gets some momentum going towards the basket, I think it's something defenses have to take into account.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. He's a really interesting player. I don't know if he's going to be that kind of guy as Bloodsport, James Johnson, because he's not the black belt in all the different martial arts.
No.
I mean, listen, Trevor Booker had probably the greatest shot I've ever seen in my life when he was with the Jazz, when he just kind of volleyball tapped the ball over his head against the Thunder with, I think it was like 0.1 on the shot clock. And that's just Trevor Booker in a nutshell, that he can make these insane plays, ridiculously talented. He just needs to harness it on a consistent basis. And if he does, he's going to be someone that forces his way to getting 25 or 30 minutes a game with the Nets.
All right, so that is it in terms of our breakdown of the Nets forwards. Before we get to the wrap, we teased it at the beginning, and it is finally here. Josh, since we last spoke 4 days ago, what has grinded your gears?
Okay, so this is actually one that, Gavin, you know very well because you were with me when it happened. So we were at a bar last night. Shout out to Viceroy in Town Manhattan, rooftop bar. And also shout out to the two brides that were there and I guess had their after party there. Was it a reception? We weren't really sure.
I think it was an after party. Yeah. One of them was like a little bit flirty with me. So I don't know. I don't know how stable that marriage is, but.
Oh, well, maybe he's a listener.
Yeah. That would be terrible. That would be such a, this segment is kind of like a Curb Your Enthusiasm segment. That would be such a curb plot for him to be listening and then take it out. No, I'm just kidding. No,
it seemed
like a beautiful wedding. They seemed very in love. We were both very happy for them.
So the drinks at this bar, I ordered a Moscow Mule because I had a few beers and I wanted a little bit something different. Moscow Mule vodka, ginger beer, lime juice, pretty simple ingredients. And it was all the cocktails at this place were $19. And for me, that is just insane. Like I don't need Belvedere as my vodka of choice. You can give me anything. Give me Absolut. That's a fine. There's a fine vodka. It's like normal. I don't need a $19 cocktail. I don't know if the copper mugs they were giving me on were blessed by some sort of god, but $19.
it was Vishnu, Josh. It was Vishnu.
Yeah. Blessed by Vishnu, but $19 for a cocktail is ridiculous, and that was honestly a huge turnoff for me.
Yeah, I'll say here, I like to play devil's advocate in these segments because I think it just gets you more riled up. But I'll throw this out there. It was like a beautiful rooftop bar. We were all extremely complimentary of the DJ. And you get this amazing view of Midtown Manhattan, or I guess Hell's Kitchen Manhattan. But the fact that they didn't charge cover for us to get in there, and you just kind of got to hang out there and enjoy the ambiance. I guess it depends on how many drinks you choose to buy for whether or not that's worth it. But if you can get out of there kind of spending like under $30, which is, again, entirely dependent on how much you want to drink, I consider that pretty reasonable for the fare. I think probably what they failed to take into account is that podcasting, despite all the hype, is not inherently a lucrative business. Yeah. So maybe they should have a discount for podcasters. I'll throw that out there.
Yeah, I'll bring that up to them next time I go there, and all of the friends I made there, DJs, bartenders, etc. You guys were great. I just think that the drink price, no drink should be $19.
Yeah.
Especially, like, we're not in Vegas. Like, obviously, Manhattan's going to be very expensive, but the view wasn't even that great. I know you live in that area, yeah. So I don't want to criticize it too much, but there's a lot of construction going on, and wasn't that that appeasing to the eye, to be honest?
Okay, I don't know. Any time I get on a roof, I'm pretty excited. I get to see all the buildings. I'm pretty set in that situation. But again, if anyone from Vice Roy is listening, we both had an overall pleasant experience there,
and we'd love for you to sponsor us.
Yeah, and that leads me into my final comment. I said it, I think, earlier on in the show. Now we have quite a few more listeners, and I probably don't promote as much as possible. But if you're ever interested in being a sponsor on the podcast, you can hit me up. You can just shoot me an email, Gavin Schall, SCHALL14@gmail.com, or hit either of us up on Twitter, or hit up the Locked On Nets Twitter account. It's a good time to get in because it's extremely affordable right now because it's before the season, and we're pretty confident we're going to get a boost in the number of people listening to this as the season goes on. So now's really the time to get in, kind of lock in a really good price on that.
So I'm saying, even though we talked about rooftop bars, you can get in now on the ground floor.
Oh, wow. That was good. Yeah, so regardless of, I guess, how big or how small your company is, I think it's extremely economically feasible to do it. And you get Nets fans frequenting your business. And I think, isn't that kind of the dream?
Also, Nets fans, tweet us your questions and also any predictions you have for the opening night game against Indiana, or also your expectations for the season. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, Josh and Alvin will get on answering all those. Anyways, that wraps up this episode of Locked On Nets. As always, check out the entirety of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are going to be talking centers next time around. Maybe we'll do a crossover with Locked On Pacers. But if you just want to get a feel for how their offseason is going into the first game, if you're a really, really big Nets fan, maybe check out Locked On Pacers next week. I don't know. Anyways, for Josh, I'm Gavin. We'll be back in the next couple days. Signing off for now.